The PFD application is open. Just a small amount of your PFD will help share local news and stories about Alaskans with Alaskans across this great state when you choose Alaska Public Media through Pick, Click, Give.
It's the middle of February and the snow lies deep on the ground here in Alaska. Summer may seem like an old memory or like an impossibly distant future, but if you have dreams of running a marathon this spring or early summer, the time to start preparing is now. You can't wait for the snow to melt off the roads and trails if you want to be prepared to have a good experience. Today on Outdoor Explorer, we'll be talking with Jerry Ross, one of Alaska's most durable and well-known distance runners, about how to prepare for a marathon. In the second segment of the show, we'll speak with Ian Marks, one of the organizers of the Mayor's Marathon, which will take place next June and is the biggest marathon in Alaska each summer.
I'm Shelby Herbert, a reporter with the Alaska Desk. That's a joint reporting effort from Alaska Public Media and KUAC, where I work in Fairbanks, and other public radio stations in Anchorage, Haines, and the Aleutians. It allows us to connect you with the issues happening in communities all across the state. You can hear our stories during the morning news, Alaska News Nightly, or online at alaskapublic.org. The Alaska Desk is only possible with the support of grants and listeners like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and with me in the studio is Jerry Ross. Jerry is a high school math teacher and the co-director of the Alaska Endurance Project. He's also been one of Alaska's fastest marathoners over the past few decades. There's a couple of feet of snow on the ground outside, but we're going to talk about running because the marathon season is coming up before long. The running season is just around the corner, only a few months away, and there's plenty of people out running all winter long. Jerry, thank you for coming in and talking to me today.
Yeah, absolutely, Adam. Yeah, what a pleasure to be here.
Well, Jerry, maybe we could start by introducing you. You are, in my view, maybe the preeminent marathon runner in Alaska, in Anchorage, for the last couple of decades at least. You've been running marathons and long races really fast for a long time. But you grew up, you were a runner at West High School. That's kind of where the running started, I think.
Diamond High School. Yeah, Diamond High School class in 1993. So ran under John Clark, who just passed away this past year. And incidentally, he was also the first person that got me into running marathons. So first marathon I did was 2003, Chicago. First Boston marathon was 2007. And so Boston, for many people, it's you have to qualify to get there. And I don't know if that first Chicago time was a qualifier or not. It probably was pretty close. But I ended up running Boston 11 times on the course and then did the COVID year, which was out and back on Chester Creek Bike Trail 2020, and you timed yourself. So okay. I don't know whether to count that or not. They gave me a medal for it, but 11 times actually in from Hopkinton to Boston.
I'm curious about whether your COVID marathon was faster than Boston because it may have been less hilly.
Yeah, definitely less hilly.
On the other hand, you're making a lot of turns on the coastal trail.
Yeah, less hilly. But not the same crowd, you know, not the same hype. So I think the hype of running a marathon like Boston really is worth, you know, it's indescribable what thousands, tens of thousands of people cheering for you will do. Although you know that, you know, what it's like, I guess, skiing through Norway and, you know, places like that too.
Well, for sure. There's something really attractive to, and not only to the fastest, you know, to the people trying to win a marathon, but to the people who are going to run a marathon in 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, the crowds are enormous out there. I did run the New York City Marathon one time, and I was so impressed by the crowds that are out there all afternoon cheering everybody on.
Right. You probably remember vividly, I bet, coming off that Queensboro Bridge, and you take this hard left-hand turn, and it just erupts with sound. So I know the spot there where
that is the spot. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. I won't forget it.
Right.
So running a marathon is certainly something, it's an experience that's worth having. you know, not only, like I said, for the fastest runners, but anybody who wants to run a marathon. And maybe you might be tempted to think that in a place like Alaska or in the north, when you've got a lot of snow on the ground, maybe it's harder to prepare for a marathon, especially a spring marathon like Boston. But there's a, I think, a pretty big group of Alaskans who do that regularly.
Yeah, there really is. You know, you look at the rosters for those spring marathons like Boston, and there's always between 30 and I think there's been as many as 75, 80 people that have made that trip to Boston to run in April. And yeah, we have our obstacles for sure to train through a winter time. But, you know, people say that, you know, tough conditions make tough people. And so there's something about just being in Alaska anyways, I think, that makes you a little bit inherently tougher if you're going to spend time outside. You know, not to say that I haven't used a treadmill a lot and that I'm not thrilled about the dome, which I totally am. So I like running inside and doing my quality, but running outside in the wintertime really gets you ready for pretty much anything that you might encounter, you know, excepting maybe the heat. You know, it doesn't really get you ready for the heat, but actually running on a treadmill does, because you sweat your brains out when you don't have any wind resistance. You know, you're just running and there's not wind coming back at you. So actually, I've always felt like I was ready for hot weather just by virtue of running on the treadmill too.
Yeah. Your mention of the treadmill reminds me of Chris Clark, who won the Olympic Trials Marathon in February of 2000. That's a feat that I won't forget.
Yeah.
Because I was so stunned that she was able to win that marathon. As an Anchorage, she was a working mother. She was working at the hospital and won that Olympic Trials in, I think it was North Carolina, South Carolina,
right,
someplace in the heat.
It was heat. It was. It was humid, I know, when she did it. And yeah, that was super impressive. Yeah, it was iconic, I think, for... I had just graduated from college around that time, and Skinny Raven had, you know, I think Sean Delaney had this nice, amazing poster of her with the Skinny Raven singlet, and it was her winning that race. And it was just like, wow, that is so cool. An Alaskan, just like you said, training through a winter time. And, you know, she hadn't, I don't think was really squarely on the national stage before that. I don't know what her, exactly what her, her prior competitions were like. I know she was a very good runner, but winning the Olympic Trials Marathon, that's next level, I think, from where she had been.
Yeah, I Googled it before we talked, and it said on Google that she was ranked 22nd going into that marathon.
Into the race itself,
yeah,
right.
So she's not one of the favorites.
Right.
And
right.
In something like a marathon, I would think that typically you have three or four people that you would think are the favorites that ought to be able to win the marathon. So coming from 22nd is quite a feat.
Right. Yeah. And I would, you know, it's too bad she's not here on the show with us today, but I would love to hear what her, what the training for her was like, you know, and like from a mental standpoint, like was it the toughest thing she'd ever done training through that winter to get to that point? Because what a breakthrough, you know, and what a, just a, yeah, an amazing thing for all Alaskans to watch that too.
Let's talk a little bit about how you go about training for. Let me ask you actually now: do you have a big race or races that you have that you're planning for this summer or the next spring?
You know, I just turned 50, and I was looking back at my my logs, and I've run 24 marathons. And to be honest, Adam, I'm ready to run in the mountains. I'm ready to run, maybe hopefully run a sub 5 minute mile this early spring. And I've had like about a year and three quarter break because of a bone bruise in my knee. So I really haven't been running much. So it's given me time to distance myself a little bit and to think, okay, what's something different that I would do? So at the moment, I'm surrounded by marathoners, but for me at least, I'm ready to do a mountain run, work on running Bird Ridge, chase Barney Griffiths, good record, it's an amazing record.
Yeah, Bird Ridge being an uphill-only race.
An uphill-only race, you know, and probably not Mount Marathon, that we're talking about marathons, but for me at least, yeah, mile on the track and Bird Ridge are the two things that I'm thinking about. But,
okay.
Yeah.
You also are the director, I believe the co-director, I guess you'd call yourself, with Todd List of Alaska Endurance Project.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Yeah, Alaska Endurance Project is essentially a training group. So Todd coaches the morning group at 6 a.m., and we meet at the Dome through the wintertime from November through February, and then I coach the evening group 6 p.m. I think the morning group's got 30 to 40 people and the evening group's got between 50 and 70 people. And we're essentially training for longer races. So you've got this group, you know, that does a workout in general based on time. So people are running, the workout we're set to do this coming week is 3 by 8 minutes at a tempo pace, which is maybe a pace that people could hold for 5 miles or 6 miles, or as you get really fit, maybe you could even hold it for a half marathon. But through the course of the session, we'll gradually sort of expand that tempo to either include more intervals or longer reps. So, and we work in speed and other things like that too. But Alaska Endurance Project is essentially a training group sort of with coaching direction, you know, and that's Todd gives it to the morning group. I give it to the evening group.
Okay. And you do, all of your workouts are in the dome.
Starting in November, we are exclusively in the dome on Wednesdays, unless the dome collapses, which happened, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago, 8 years ago, something like that. And then we shifted back outside, which is where we'd been doing them prior to the dome. So the dome came after Alaska Endurance Project started, and we loved the dome. Don't get me wrong, yeah. We loved the dome. But then once the end of February rolls around, then we shift out to run on Postmark Drive. There's a run called Totem that's parallel to the airstrip out there, which is a really great place to run. It's essentially the road, and they plow it. It's plowed, it seems like, before you can wake up. You know, we've been out there at 6 a.m. and it's plowed. So they have a real strict schedule, I think, for keeping snow off of that road. It's the road that heads out from essentially from Point Warren's off out to... there's a drug and rehabilitation treatment center, and people call it Totem, but...
Okay, the Clitheroe Center.
Clitheroe Center, that's right, yeah. And so if you're out there at 8 a.m. on a Saturday, you'll be surrounded by other runners that are probably training for a spring marathon, if not just a spring race, or, you know, it's just ingrained into their habits to get up and run early on the weekend. But that's, okay. That's a place that's dependable, though, through the years.
Yeah, the road that it parallels the runway there. You mm-hmm. go up over the gradual hill. The Alaska Endurance Project, I get the impression that you focus on the quality workouts and that people who are part of this program would do long runs or easy runs or other types of runs on their own or with friends outside of the Alaska Endurance Project. And you guys focus on the group sort of interval sessions, pace, tempo sessions, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So we meet Wednesdays. Either 6 in the morning or 6 in the evening, and that's what it is exactly, is it's a quality session that's designed to, you know, really enhance your ability to dump, you know, dump byproduct of running, you know, so you're working on improving your lactate threshold, you know, raising your ability just to sort of embrace the suck, to deal with the pain that comes with running further and further and further. And so we don't really spend a lot of time working on speed. We do a little bit of speed work in November and December, but then we shift and the session is predominantly this tempo type pace, which a tempo type pace is a pace that, you know, gets your heart rate up to maybe 70% of its max, and which is faster than you would run for a marathon. But in doing so, you're running more, you know, your economy is better and your ability to persevere, I think, is really improved, you know, and it's a really nice pace to train at because it helps races that are at a slower pace like a marathon. And it also helps races that are a faster pace where if you're running a mile, say, and you get to that third lap and then your body just starts to flood, you know, a tempo work that would have supported that prior to it is something that maybe helps get you through some of those tough times too, where your body then is essentially able to get rid of, you know, this flood of a feel of lactic acid or whatever it might be.
The group that you have showing up, it's a big group. I mean, you've said, I think, 50 to 70 people.
Right, yeah.
I would think that the goals and motivations of this group are quite different from person to person. I mean, you've got some people I would think are trying to run the fastest marathon they can run or half marathon or 10K or whatever it may be. Do you have other people who just aren't, they don't want to race. They just want to go out and do workouts.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of the whole gamut. Yeah. Just like you said, there's people that are out there maybe training for their first 5K or 10K. Yeah, there is another group too that's in town. The Skinny Raven Run Club, you know, is maybe a little more supportive of just brand new beginner runners. But we do have a pretty wide range of ability. And that's one thing that makes the sport of running so cool is I could be, you know, going with an 80-year-old friend that qualified for the Boston Marathon. Our goal is still to run 26.2 miles, you know. And so even though we might not be running it at the same pace, We've got to cover the same distance. So the work that we have to do is, you know, is not too dissimilar. So the slower people in the group are essentially doing the same kind of preparatory work that the faster people are doing, which gives us a sense of solidarity, I guess. And it's just like, oh, okay, everyone's here suffering. It's just some people are suffering at different speeds.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've thought about that some in regards to cross-country ski races. You know, like I am involved with the American Birkebeiner ski race every
right,
year.
Right.
And at the end of the day, as it's getting dark, you've got people still coming in off the course, and they've been out there for 6 hours or 7 hours. And I think, you know, the elite skiers, they were out there for like 2 hours and 3 minutes or something, going hard.
Right.
But their race is over. And they also spent all winter. I mean, they're professional skiers, so they're spending all summer. This is all they're doing, is preparing for this. It sure is a lot easier for those elite skiers to ski something like the American Birkebeiner or the Boston Marathon, I think, in a lot of ways, than the person who's going to take 6 hours to run the Boston Marathon or the American Birkebeiner. Because they're going, if they're going hard, they're going hard for a long, long time.
I totally agree. How can you not respect the person that's out there that takes 6 hours to run and doesn't stop, or maybe stops and walks through the water stations or something like that? But it is really impressive, I think. You know, you have to be appreciative of the Chris Clarks and the people that win the races and run close to 2 hours, because just like you said, they've probably trained 80 to 90 to 120 miles a week to get ready for it. But the people that are out there doing their first marathon just to you know, either, you know, cross it off the list or whatever the motivations might be, it's really inspiring, I think, for whatever the reason is to get that kind of an achievement, you know, taken care of.
Yeah. Before we move on to another subject, let me just ask quickly, how does a person get into like a program like the Alaska Endurance Project? Or do you sign up with the Dome and then you sign up with you guys?
It's kind of just organically seemed to find us. You know, okay. We don't really advertise. There's a Facebook page, yeah. But it's I guess it's maintained. I used to have a website, but it's just like, you know, the group is big enough without paying for advertising anywhere. So people just kind of find it. If you were to Google Alaska Endurance Project, probably take you to the Facebook page, or dropping by Skinny Raven. Skinny Raven sends a lot of people our way too.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And the, how do you get into the Dome? You buy a membership of the
Dome?
Yeah.
So the Dome membership is separate. I think most people have either a punch pass, or they do the monthly passes. And sometimes, you know, they'll do the yearly pass. So it's, the Dome is a separate ancillary cost.
In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and today we're discussing how to prepare during the winter months to run a spring or summer marathon. My guest is Anchorage marathoner Jerry Ross. As we get older, and I'm also in my 50s, but a little bit ahead of you, one thing that all my friends, especially those a little bit older than me, are telling me is when you get into your 50s, you got to start doing strength workouts to avoid injury. And this is what I've been finding as I've been getting older. It seems like everything I do, I feel like, oh man, I better not crash on my alpine skis or I'm going to get hurt. Or if I run too much, I'm going to get hurt. Or if I ski too fast, I might, I feel like I'm getting more fragile. You know, I guess if I were looking to run a long race, a marathon, one of the big concerns I would have would be, am I going to make it to the starting line without having some sort of an injury?
I think probably as people are just getting started, that's when they're most likely to get injured. You know, their training increases and they're running 10 or 15 miles 1 week and then 25 or 30 miles the next week, and they're really doing a lot more, you know, doing a lot more volume on the week than maybe they should be. You know, there's a rule that somebody put this rule out there at some point, and it's along the lines of 10%, you know, maybe don't raise your volume by more than 10%. And that seems to be a pretty good, it's maybe conservative, but I think being consistent and conservative is better than being aggressive and injured. So just not overdoing it is kind of one of the keys, but keep doing it is also one of the keys. You know, that when you stop because you're injured, then you've really, that's a big setback, you know, and you don't get those weeks back that you spend, you know, doing physical therapy.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned this, because just yesterday I saw a short little interview with a professional cyclist, a guy who rides Tour de France. He's one of the very best guys in the world. And he was asked what he likes to do in his, he's got like maybe 6 weeks off from the bike right around Christmas, where the racing season ends. And then he's going to start training, you know, five or six or seven weeks later. He's got a little bit of a rest period in there. And somebody was asking him what he likes to do when he's not biking for exercise. And he said, Well, I would love to go running, but every time I go running, I've been on the bike for like 11 months and I can't run the way I want to. So my goal after I get out of cycling, maybe it's 10 years in the future, I want to be I want to try and run a fast running race, or I want to try to become a fast runner. But he said, I think as long as I'm a cyclist, I'm not going to be able to do it because I just don't have time to get into it without getting hurt. And it's not going to do me any good in the off season to just go out and immediately get hurt running and then have to try to deal with that when I'm getting back on the bike. So it's kind of an interesting perspective on what you were just talking about, that it takes some time to get going.
It really does take some time. And I think, so I can understand that perspective. When I was running 110 miles a week, I didn't have time to cross train. I didn't want to cross train. I was so efficient at running that my body was looking forward to more runs and more miles. You know, it gets to that point where you just get so efficient and it really expects it. And so were I to shift to all of a sudden trying to bike 3 hours a week, it would have been the worst thing for me to do probably at that time. But that said, I think there's a lot of Alaskans that are especially successful because they do hike and they do ski and they, you know, and they do bike and they do run. And so, you know, when I look at the population of Alaska runners and mountain runners that do really well on a national and even international stage, you know, the Claire Rhodes and Trayson, Chad Trample, there's a lot of runners that have just done really well, but they spend time on skis and they spend time on the bike and they spend time in the mountains. So I think that's something that Alaskans do have going for them that, you know, maybe other mountain estates have going for them too, but you know, it's a good thing.
I wonder if running, if you are, you know, this winter, so far we have a pretty good winter. I mean, it was, we're getting the snow now and it's pretty deep out there. I sort of wonder if you were preparing for a race this summer and you were out running on like the Coastal Trail or the Chester Creek Trail, running on a groomed but kind of soft trail, that seems like you probably wouldn't be that likely to get injured, and you might gain a lot of strength just running through, you know, when you're sinking an inch into the snow.
Yeah, that's tough, right? It's tough because as a fast runner, I can appreciate building strength. And as a fast runner, I can detest having to go slow. Like I just don't necessarily want to run 40 seconds a mile slower, you know?
Just because you're on something like Chester Creek Trail,
right,
sinking in half an inch.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the sinking in half an inch is, but that said, if I'm sinking in like an eighth of an inch, giving up just a little tiny bit, you know, and it doesn't sound like much, and maybe I have a cold wind in my face or something like that, those are also good things, I think. You know, when you have the extra layers of clothes, that's resistance, you know. And so then you get to a course like in Boston, and I remember the race that I ran in 2007, they almost canceled the race. There were porta-cans that were blown over from high winds the night before. There were it was near flooding, and I remember John Clark and I were there making our way to the start line. We're like, all right, well, people are, you know, really upset, but we're ready for this. We've trained through, you know, we've been in Alaska all winter. So it's, it wasn't that bad, you know, to be honest, it wasn't that bad.
I mean, just saying to yourself in the fall, okay, I'm going to train all winter for something like the Boston Marathon or Mayor's Marathon. The second segment of this show will be about Mayor's Marathon, which is happening here in late June. And I'll have a guest on and talk about that race that's happening. But I would think that maybe even if you say to yourself in September, October, okay, this is what I'm going to do this winter, I'm going to be ready for a marathon in the spring, even there you're going to have to deal with worse weather than you're going to have to deal with if you live in Lubbock, Texas or someplace like that during the winter.
Yeah, and hopefully you get to experience it in training so that when it happens on race day, you're ready for it, yeah. Right? Because, I mean, we all know that in Alaska it's unusual that it snows in June, but it could happen, yeah. You know, and if it's not snowing, it could be really rainy and windy and nasty. Right. So it's kind of an opportunity, I guess, you know, when you have sort of these inclement things that you have to train through. And thankfully now we don't have to do that on the everyday because of things like the dome and treadmills. But I'd still see it as an opportunity.
What would be a typical training program for somebody who wants to go from a casual or decent runner who does run several times a week already, and they want to do well in a race that's 6 or 8 months down the road? What kind of a program would you do, and how would you find resources for a program.
Yeah, I mean, the internet obviously is amazing now, and you know, with AI, you can say, you know,
make me a training program.
Make me a 6 month training program, and I've done it just to see what pops out, and generally it's pretty good, you know. And okay. I guess the things that I would look for, because if you don't have somebody to audit it for you, I mean, that's the one thing with AI, right? You want to have somebody maybe take a look at it. But if you're going to run 26 miles and you're training for a marathon, you probably need to cover 20 miles maybe twice in training. So you need to do a 20-mile run probably 3 weeks out from the race, 5 weeks out from the race, 6 weeks out from the race, something like that. You need to do probably a couple of 20-mile runs. And of course, in order to be able to do a 20-mile run, well, that means you probably needed to run 18. And before that, you needed to run 16. And before that, you needed to run 14. So you should see like a progression of runs. So that brings you to the time that it takes to prepare, and really doing a long run every single week and always increasing it is not necessarily the best way to go, because I think you have to give your body a chance to absorb and recover. So when I've coached people in the past, or when I coached myself, I always tried to work on the idea of doing, I'm going to build, you know, my long run by a mile or 2 miles, build, and then recover. So I'd either have 3 weeks of increasing and 1 week of recovering, or maybe 2 weeks of increasing and 1 week of recovering, where I really felt like, oh, this next long run isn't going to stretch me out so much that I might not recover and be ready to do my following long run, you know, subsequent week. So I think a good training plan emphasizes the long run, because that's the thing that's most like what you're going to be doing on race day. But then also a good training plan would support that with some medium distance runs, you know, on the order of 10 to 14 miles, maybe during the middle of the week, where, you know, you're really still working on your aerobic capacity and your body is getting used to the idea that, oh, okay, I'm going to be running for, you know, 2.5 or 4.5 or 6.5 hours at some point. So, you know, you can't just expect your body to be able to do that unless you haven't conditioned it to do that.
One thing that occurs to me as you talk about mileage and running and the goals for training is that if you are if you're somebody who can run a marathon in 2 hours and 15 minutes, you're going to do a 20-mile run relatively quickly, I would think, at a tempo pace, or is that what we're talking about, running it at a pretty high tempo, or just no. kind of just
yeah not necessarily
a casual think,
yeah,
20 miles
yeah I think you okay. can do a casual 20-mile run and you know, you can set yourself up for success too. Alaska outside, we're limited because there's just not that many places that you can run. The bike trails are good when they're hard enough. The single track trails are amazing when the bikers have been out there to beat them down for the runner. So thank you, Single Track Associate, for those wonderful trails. But you know, otherwise there's just limited places. And so we talked about the Totem Run, which I've been out there with friends and we've run that darn, there's a distance, a stretch that's 3.5 miles from Postmark Drive. So the parking lot Postmark Drive, and then you would run at the end of Northern Lights Boulevard to get to Point Warren's off and then out to the treatment center. That's 3.5 miles one direction. So if you do that out back, that's 7 miles. And if you do a appropriate long run, then you would do that three times. You do, and we call that a triple totem.
Oh yeah, and that doesn't sound hard at all.
It doesn't sound
three times out and back.
Three times out back. I mean, three out backs, but it's 7 miles each time. Right. But really, yeah, that pace, the paces that you train can be slower than the paces that you're going to race. Like I think when I was running 5:30 mile pace for a marathon, I'd do my training run sometimes at 7 minute pace or 7:30 pace, especially in the wintertime in Alaska. You know, when it's colder and that slows you down a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, but that sounds, I mean, I'm kind of inspired by that. I don't feel like I would be able to run a 20-mile run, but out and back on that loop three times, that sounds easier, right?
Yeah. No, and plus you have chocolate chip cookies waiting for you, right. And you have a new fresh shirt, a new hat. You know, you do 1 7-mile stretch, you come back, and it's like a pit stop, It's just maybe you change your shoes. I mean, that's another thing, I guess, to talk about is Alaska. We've got all the variable footing. And so having studded shoes is a thing, you know, and they sell those at Skinny Raven and REI. Those are really nice things to have.
Yeah. Do you use for running? I would think that in a typical winter, if you're preparing for some races in the summer, that you're going to run on a variety of types of terrain. Every once in a while, it may be easiest for you to just go on the Chester Creek Trail and run 5 miles there.
Right.
And it could be really soft, and you're just going to have to deal with it. And other times, you're going to be on ice.
Right.
And so you probably have, you would have a variety of footwear that you're going to select the right one for the right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And I would think for any serious runner, that's got to be, you're going to have a few pairs of shoes available to you, depending on the run.
Yeah, it's a thing. I mean, that's the one piece of equipment that's critical, right, is your footwear. I mean, that's the one thing that's, there's performance clothing, and that'll keep you, you know, from getting hypothermia if you're out there training. But your body does such a good job of generating heat. You know, it's almost like less is more sometimes, too, when you're out running. But footwear is paramount. And so to have a variety of footwear is also something I think that people sometimes underestimate, that having a variety of footwear is good, because running is so repetitive. So if you have two or three different types of pair of shoes, then it's a slightly different stress on your feet and on your body, which is also a good thing, I think.
Yeah. In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and today we're discussing how to prepare during the winter months to run a spring or summer marathon. My guest is Anchorage marathoner Jerry Ross. The second segment of this show, as I mentioned earlier, is about the Mayor's Marathon, which happens in late June. If you were a casual runner looking to run the Mayor's Marathon, how would you go about doing that?
So I would be getting my butt in gear right now. If I was a casual runner with the goal of running a marathon in June, I would try to figure out what's the longest distance right now, maybe this week, that I could comfortably run. And for most people, that's somewhere around 3 to 5 miles, maybe, you know, depending on the fitness. And other people, it might be 10 miles or 12 miles. And that would be a stretch, maybe, for those people, too. But if the goal is to get 26.2 miles in, it's not going to happen overnight or in the span of a month. It's got to take a few months to do that. And so setting up a goal, a weekly goal where you're going to run maybe 3 or 4 days a week, I think is reasonable for most people. That gives you a day of recovery in between, and maybe you cross train or you ski or you lift weights or you play pickleball, something like that in between. But trying to get your body used to running is really important. And so I try to find that whatever that threshold for distance that I could handle. And I might, if I was just a casual runner, if I was coaching a casual runner, what I might say is, well, why don't you find a 2 mile loop close to your house and just, you know, see how many loops that you can do where it actually feels like you can run and not have your running degrade as you're going, you know, so not just annihilate yourself to see how far you can possibly go, but how far can you go and have it not be so uncomfortable. And then that's a good starting point. And then from there, maybe trying to build that at least one or 2 miles every week, and then every third or fourth week, take a recover week.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier the 20-mile run, and I didn't quite get to my comment that I was going to make about that, and that is that if you are like a 3.5-hour marathoner versus a 2-hour and 15-minute marathoner, sounds to me like you're training more as a, I mean, you're going to have more time training.
That's a time commitment. Yes, that is definitely a time commitment. So that might mean if you've got an 8 in the morning job, you might be waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to run, and there'll be people out running. You'd be surprised at all the people that are outside running at that time.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about recovery a lot, and I've been involved in cross-country skiing a lot, and our recovery tends to be cardiovascular recovery, you know, getting rested so you can do another good workout. You were talking about going on a long run, but then making sure that you're recovered and taking a recovery week where you're going pretty easy, because it's going to take that long to recover so you're ready for your next long run. Is that mostly muscle recovery that we're talking about?
Yeah, really it is. I think when you do a long run that's been a longer run than you've done, it, whether it's in your life or in that training block, be it 4 months or 6 months, if you've taken yourself up to a, you know, for me, it starts happening usually around 14 or 15 miles. If I get to that point, it's just like, okay, yeah, I felt that. It's been a long time since I've gone that far. And I'm not ready to do that anytime in the next 2 or 3 days. And because I'm not ready to do that in the next 2 or 3 days, I really should be taking it easy and not just doing 5 or 6 miles, but really taking it easy. Maybe take a rest day, maybe run 3 or 4 miles, maybe cross train, you know, since we've got so many great cross training avenues. But then by doing that 14-mile run or whatever it might have been, you are more ready to do a slightly longer run the next time around. And so it is a muscle recovery for sure, but it's amazing how you can really feel that threshold just get pushed out a little further and a little further each time you do a long run because your body adapts to it. But I think in order for your body to really get that full adaptation, it's got to be able to recover too. You can't just take it to the edge day after day after day after day. You've got to give it a few days so that it can, and I don't know if that's a cellular regeneration thing. You know, I don't know exactly what the exercise physiology is behind it, but running beats you up. You know, I think most people that have run any length would tell you that, oh yeah, running is, it's a hard thing. It kind of beats you up and you have to build your body up to being able to absorb, you know, how it beats you up. And once you do that, it's great because then running, you see those people that are running and smiling and you think, what does it take to be one of those people? Cause that running doesn't look like that for me. Right. It's like, well, how's that person smiling and they're running like 7 minute pace or 8 minute pace or 9 minute pace. And, guaranteed that person has done lots of running, but they've also probably done lots of recovering to get them ready for that next run.
Yeah. When you've been training for really long races like marathons and that sort of thing, how many days a week do you run? Is it less than seven, I think?
Yeah. I mean, now that I'm older, I'm 50 now and through my 40s, you know, I'll kind of oscillate, and I've run at a pretty high level for my age group too. So I don't want to misinform people, but you know, I've run anywhere between 5 and 10 times a week, I'd say, okay. You know, in the last 4 years. And I've been pretty competitive, as I've been competitive at least. I'm also used to it, you know, so it's hard to say to the person that's just getting going here, like, you know, should you expect to be able to run 10 times a week? Probably not, because then you wouldn't be giving yourself the muscle time enough to recover that it needs. Whereas I think if you're running 4 days a week, that really does a good job. That gives you 3 off days, which is kind of key, you know, and, you know, I'll see people in the pool. I spent a lot of time in the pool the last year recovering from a bone bruise, and what a great place to go where there's no impact, you know, yeah. And I don't necessarily know that swimming translates well to running in terms of the muscles, but in terms of the aerobic gains, you know, I think that there's a lot of benefit, you know, for swimmers or for somebody who's swimming in order to recover their muscles from running.
Yeah, yeah. I've been really impressed by your running and by other people who run a lot who are my age and older, because as I've been getting older, I run less and less. And maybe that's been a bit of a, maybe I've been wimping out a little bit. Mm. But I have always, and I've said this to people sometimes, I'll see somebody that's my age or a little bit older running a fast marathon, and I'll think, how do they do that? Like, I don't think I could. And I'm a pretty fit person. I mean, I'm exercising a lot. I'm, you know, I do a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, and I think maybe it's only because I haven't actually taken the leap into preparing to be a good runner, you know, running, starting small and gradually.
Yeah.
I run maybe twice a week and it's probably 30 or 40 minutes a time.
Right. Right.
And that's about it.
And 30 or 40 minutes. See, that's the thing. We were having this conversation before. And you were talking about the biker, the elite biker who wanted to be the runner, wants to be the runner. And I think his problem is his starting point for running should be so much smaller than what he thinks it should be, because he's just not used to running, right? And so that guy needs to probably be starting with a 20-minute run that's pretty easy, as opposed to an hour run, which he could surely do, because an hour run for a biker, that's... Come on, that's just...
And his typical training day is 7 hours.
Right, his typical training day is seven hours. So, but I think that's, you know, it's just when you don't have those muscles that are really conditioned, or if you've let your muscles go, yeah, your heart can handle it. You know, your heart can handle going out there and running for 90 minutes, but then your body is just a wreck afterwards. Yeah. And then it's not just 1 or 2 days to recover. It's your spirit that needs to recover because you feel so bad moving the next day, you know? So I think...
Yeah, that may be it. Maybe it's just a question of perspective. If you are him and you're doing 6 and 7 hour races all the time and you think, hey, I'm one of the fittest guys in the world. I can at least run for an hour or two. No big deal. And maybe he should be doing 20 minutes.
Right,
And maybe it's the same for me.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe take you out on a run here, Adam.
We'll go maybe for a we'll little... have to do it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me, Jerry. You know, we've got the Mayor's Marathon coming up in the second segment of this show. And I feel a little inspired. I'm not going to be doing Mayor's Marathon myself, But I'm inspired by some of the things you've said.
Yeah.
Today.
Well, you know, there's a half marathon there, I think. Right. There's a 5K maybe or something like that. And even if it's not a race at one of those marathon races, there's all kinds of runs that you might find yourself into where it's just like, hey, you know, maybe I'll lace them up for Bird Ridge or whatever it might be.
Well, one more question I have for you is you've been known locally among runners as a long distance running guy. I mean, marathons, half marathons, 10Ks, this sort of thing. And you were saying at the beginning of the show that you want to do Bird Ridge and do that fast. You want to run under 5 minutes a mile. So how is your training going to change for that, for those things?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I find myself on a radio show talking about my goals because now it's really
now it's out there.
Now it's out there. Now it's just like,
well, you don't have to over you don't have to over disclose here.
But in terms of how am I going to do it? I've been in the dome working on my speed, and you know, I kind of know what it takes to do that to run a fast mile. And it's been a minute since I've been able to really run fast on the track. Is in a minute for me being 2 years. But to run a mountain race and to really be competitive, I know that takes more than I'm putting in right now. So I mean that takes either hours on Nordic skis. I think Nordic skiing is a great way to get ready for mountain runs, or even hiking. You know, there's a lot of hiking opportunities through the wintertime. I think that people just don't take advantage of. You know, there's people going up Bird Ridge every single Sunday. So. You know, I think there's a proverb, it's a Finnish proverb, I think, that's something like skiers are made in the summer and runners are made in the winter, you know, and I know that goes for mountain runners too. So there's no surprise why the skiers dominate the mountain runs is they're busting their asses all winter while some of us are thinking about their goals, you know, for the mountain runs, myself included. So I need to get busy.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me. This has been it's been really interesting to me and really inspiring for me, and I appreciate you coming in.
Yeah.
My guest today has been Jerry Ross here on Outdoor Explorer on KSKA, where we've been discussing winter running and marathon training. Thanks for coming in, Jerry.
Hey, you bet, Adam. It's been fun.
Stick around for the second half of the show, where we'll talk about the Mayor's Marathon.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Adam Verrier, and with me now is Ian Marks. He's one of the race organizers of the Mayor's Marathon, and he's also the Sports Information Director for the UAA Athletic Department. In the interest of full disclosure, it should be noted that I'm associated with UAA Athletics as a volunteer assistant ski coach, and that the Mayor's Marathon is a fundraiser for UAA Athletics. Ian, thanks for coming and joining me here in the studio today.
Happy to be here.
Well, you are one of the organizers of the Mayor's Marathon. Can you just introduce us to the race? What's this race all about?
Yeah, it's a longstanding race. This will be the 52nd year of the Anchorage Mayor's Marathon. And it's actually four races on the summer solstice every year. We have a full marathon, a half marathon, a solstice classic, which is just under 5 miles, and then a kids mile as well.
So this has got to be one of the biggest running races in the Anchorage area.
I believe it is. We have routinely over 3,000 participants coming from all over the world for this race.
Can you tell me a little bit about, I mean, I know it as the Mayor's Marathon, but there's a lot of other races. Do you actually have more participants in the shorter races than you do in the actual full-length marathon?
Our half marathon is actually our most popular race of the four. A lot of people like the, I wouldn't say easier challenge of it, but it's much more accommodating to more folk.
I was speaking with Jerry Ross earlier, and he was telling me that, among other things, if you were going to do the Mayor's Marathon this summer, you probably better get started now because there's a lot of preparation that needs to go into a marathon if you're going to enjoy the race and not just struggle through it. And
yeah, a marathon is a very large commitment for a lot of people, both in terms of training and time and resources. And we also see a lot of people that had the best of intentions to run the full marathon. And whatever happens, an injury or some life things come up, they drop down to the half. And so we often have a lot of people show up that weekend and are like, hey, I signed up for the full. Can I do the half? And we're more than happy to help those people.
Okay. So that can happen as late as the day before the race or so. They can just make a decision to go shorter.
Yeah. You can also make a decision to go longer too. We don't usually have that.
Okay.
That side, but that is an option as well.
Huh. Okay. The race is happening on June 20th, I understand. I think you may have already mentioned that earlier. It's right at the summer solstice, the lightest time of the year here in Alaska and the Northern Hemisphere. Do you have a lot of people coming in? I think you have a lot of people coming in from out of state. Maybe Mayor's Marathon is an excuse to go on a vacation to Alaska. Do you see that a lot?
Oh, we definitely. We kind of joke as a committee. We have people ask us, do you know the date 3 years from now? I'm trying to plan my vacation. And we're like, you plan your vacations that succinctly 3 years in advance? Of our 3,000 participants, we usually have about half of them aren't from Alaska.
Okay.
So we'll get some years we get all 50 states. We'll get people internationally, not just Canada. We get Japan, Europe, South America. They come from all over. And I think part of the draw is Alaska. Alaska's fun, run the last frontier. But for a lot of the southern states, it's a chance to do a race that's cool, like literally, the weather-wise. You know, if you're training in Atlanta, Texas, Florida, you know, you're still getting up really early because it's really hot there. And there's not a whole lot of races for that reason in the South in the summer. So if you're looking for a summer marathon, you know, your options are limited to some of the northern, more northern climates.
Yeah, I guess I didn't even realize that. So and maybe this is getting outside of your area of expertise, maybe, but down in the South, if you want to run a running race in the middle of summer, do those races happen like super early in the morning? Do you know if that's typical? Maybe you don't know.
I'd have to check, but oftentimes they're shorter or they start real early because of the heat. And I've ran Grandma's Marathon in Duluth, Minnesota, and they'll get hit with some heat waves too. And some of those races, they'll move the start up an hour or two just to get people finished before the heat hits.
Huh. And that's even way up north by the Canadian border. This race route, I think, is another thing that attracts people to this race. It's not a typical road route. It's not like we're running up and down Tudor Road or down the Glen Highway. The route, I think, goes through the woods and Bicentennial Park. And maybe could you take us through the race route a little bit?
Yeah. Our course has changed and evolved over the years. And I really like the latest iteration. So the full, we start at the soccer stadium at Kincaid Park, and then we just run right along the coastal trail for the first 9-ish miles until you get to Westchester. And then we go up Chester Creek all the way to Goose Lake. We'll weave through UAA and the Alaska Native Hospital campus. And then we do a little loop through Bicentennial Park there, come down Campbell Air Strip Road, go back over Tudor, and then make our way back down Chester Creek, and then we finish at the park strip.
Okay, so it's a mostly downhill finish the last 6 or 8 miles. But then if you got to come out of Chester Creek and up to the park strip, I guess that's just in the last mile. You've got kind of a tough hill.
Yeah, that last mile is a doozy. But you got to remember that first mile is a doozy downhill, too, coming out of Kincaid Park. It's a fun challenge, I would say. And I think that uphill finish, there's a lot of people out on the course, and you can see the excitement and you can hear it. And it just really is fun to get people to that finish line.
Yeah. And I suppose it's a good challenge to it. Right near the end, it's not a long hill. It's a significant hill in a marathon, especially coming right near at the end, but it's not a long one. So I would think that maybe you get to that and say, okay, but just make it up this hill, then I'm coming into the park strip to the finish.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
This course is, I noticed this is considered a Boston Marathon qualifier. As some people may know, you can only get into the Boston Marathon if you qualify using marathon time from another race. Do you have a lot of people using this as a Boston Marathon qualifier? I'm thinking maybe Alaskans. They don't have to go somewhere else to do a marathon, qualify for Boston if they want to do that.
Yeah, it's a qualifier. The interesting thing about becoming a Boston qualifier, it's just about the course. And there's two main things. It's about net your elevation gain and loss, mainly the loss, And then there's a weird component of your start and your finish have to be within so much distance of each other as well. So you can't just run straight downhill for a Boston qualifier. And it's a nice thing to have. We always take pride in being a Boston qualifier. The last thing we want is to someone to run a Boston qualifier and then tell them, hey, we don't qualify. And so I wouldn't say our course is fast. I wouldn't say our course is slow. It's kind of middle of the road. It's comparable with a lot of other races. And I think it's pretty beginner friendly. You don't want a completely flat course. That's going to be it's not going to be fun, actually. You want a little bit of change. And the other nice thing about our course is we don't run on roads. Everything is either on the greenbelt, bike paths, or sidewalk. So you don't have to deal with – we only cross – the only three roads we cross besides that finish up the road there are the three right here by the studio.
Right. So essentially the entire thing is bike paths and also soft surface trails out in Bicentennial Park, I believe.
Yeah, we've got about 2.5 miles of that new gravel path through the Bicentennial.
So in the entirety of the marathon course, it's only 2 miles of gravel, 2.5 miles of gravel. And in the half marathon course, there's no gravel because you're coming straight from Kincaid Park.
Yeah, so the half marathon, we start at the same place, Soccer Stadium, but then they run towards the entrance of Kincaid, about 1.5 miles, and then you'll go right back to the Soccer Stadium, get on to the Coastal Trail, and then just go to Westchester and then up End Street to the finish.
The course is also, it goes through the woods there in Bicentennial Park and around the university and actually anywhere on this course, including the city parts. I mean, you could run into wild animals out there. Has that been an issue in the past? I mean, how does the Mayor's Marathon organization mitigate that situation with wild animals like moose and maybe even a bear?
Yeah, that's always a concern for the committee, and it's something we discuss and review constantly. It's almost a guarantee that there'll be at least one moose on the course. And for the Alaskans, it's normal. Yeah. You know, you see a moose, you give it some space, and then you go around it. A lot of the outer staters really like seeing the moose. They'll all stop, pull out their cameras. You know, that's part of the experience. And I believe it was 21 or 22, there was actually a bear on course near Goose Lake. And we have an emergency action plan. We have volunteers and our course leaders. They all carry bear spray, and we had to unfortunately pause the race. Fortunately, we were at Goose Lake. Everybody was very understanding. We paused it for about 15 minutes. We did a quick reroute through campus and then got everybody back on their way. There was no issues, and we didn't even really get any complaints, just thanks. And I think that just is a testament to the organization of the race and just the attitude of the runners. You know, as a runner, you encounter things and, you know, it's just rolling with the punches.
Well, in this race also, I think you have cyclists that go in front of the leaders, at least, or the leader of the race. Is that, do we still have that? I think you've done that in the past.
Yeah, I've served as the race leader, I guess. We have about 10 people on bikes, mainly at the front of the full and half races to help people get through the course. If we have any issues on course, sometimes, you know, a sign will get moved or whatever. We're just going to make sure everybody makes it through the course because not everybody's from here. And so you might not know the course. Between that and then just runner safety, I think we do a great job of keeping everybody safe and getting everybody to the finish.
Well, speaking of safety, you also have presumably a bunch of aid stations out there. They're present at any marathon. How many aid stations do you have?
So on the full course, we'll have 14 aid stations. The half, we'll have 5. And then on our Solstice Classic, we have 2. And these aid stations, they'll provide everything from water, electrolytes. Sometimes they'll have snacks, especially for the full. People need fuel to keep going. They're running for multiple hours. But then they also will have first aid as well. So if you have, it could be anything from just like a blister or a cut to something more serious. You know, you have pulled a muscle, a cramp, something like that, we ask that you just get to the aid station and we can help you there.
Yeah. So it's almost, it's more than one every 2 miles. I mean, these are really frequent. You're passing aid stations all the time, it sounds like.
Correct. And a lot of that is we have a lot of, if you look at our course, there's a 5 mile section that you do twice, or you go out and back. And so that really helps too, because you get an aid station both ways going.
In both directions. A little more efficient that way for the organizers. What's your favorite thing about this marathon? You've been involved, I think, for a long time. You were leading a bike. Now you're taking care of information distribution about, you know, regarding this race. And I think you've been involved for a while.
Yeah, this is going to be about my 10th year with the race. And the thing that I enjoy the most is just being able to share Alaska, this running community, and this course with people. Runners love to share their experiences. And it's a chance to show off the great park system that we have here, the great running community that we have here, and just show them all the things that we enjoy and why we like living here.
Okay. In the past, the team in training, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, they all had purple on. And they were probably way more than half the people in this race were in that organization. But I don't think there's an association anymore between Mayor's Marathon and team in training. But you still have more than half of the people in this race coming from outside of Alaska. Is that just because it's an attractive race, because it has a reputation as a nice course, or is there some other organized thing that's bringing people to this race?
Well, we get a number of people. They're called 50 staters. And so they make it a goal to run a marathon in every state. And so I think there's maybe 6 or 7 in Alaska. We're the easiest town to get to. We're the biggest one. So that brings a lot. I think some of it is that word of mouth. Other people have always wanted to come to Alaska.
Yeah.
And so it gives them a reason. Or we've had people too who plan their vacation and then they find out, oh, there's a race, I'll do it.
Okay. While I'm there.
And then we get some real crazies who they'll email us, I'm flying in at 4 a.m. the morning of the race. Can I get my bib at the start? And I'm like, we try to accommodate everybody. And I'm like, not the best way to go into a marathon, but you do you.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like this. I mean, it's an Alaska race, and it sounds like it's still local enough that if somebody says, hey, can you have my bib for me at the start? You'd say, yeah, I'll have it in my pocket for you. Come
exactly.
And find me. I'll be the guy in the green jacket over by the dumpsters or something. Well, Ian, thank you so much for coming in and talking to me today. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to I'm going to be in town. I don't think I'm going to run the race, but I think I'm going to be in town for the Mayor's Marathon. Maybe I'll have to see if I can find a way to get involved in that race.
Exactly. Even if you're not a runner, there's opportunities for you to get involved. And if nothing else, just go on by the course and cheer the runners on.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in, Ian.
Thank you.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. Tobin Shelby is its producer, and the program is edited by Ammon Swenson and Crystal Hyde. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed on the show are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can listen to Outdoor Explorer anytime at alaskapublic.org and in your favorite podcast app. If you have a question, comment, or a topic suggestion, email outdoorexplorer@alaskapublic.org.